From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Governor J.B. Pritzker is getting his wish. He'll face Republican farmer and state senator Darren Bailey in his reelection campaign this fall. The billionaire Democrat supported organizations that ran ads aimed at boosting Bailey's chances in the Republican primary. Pritzker had no trouble in his own primary against a Chicago-area VA nurse named Beverly Miles, winning 92% of the vote. Speaking to supporters at a hotel last night, he immediately went on the attack.
They want to distract us into believing that gay marriage, Black history, Disney World, and library books are more of a threat to our children than AR-15s and ghost guns.
Pritzker also criticized Bailey for seeking the endorsement of former President Donald Trump, which he got at a rally last weekend. But that came after Bailey had already been leading in the polls for weeks.
Now the elites and the press say that Pritzker's a shoe-in. You get it. They say our fate's set.
No.
That a farmer can't beat a billionaire. Friends, the funny thing is, these same people said that we couldn't win the primary.
Bailey ultimately won with more than 57% of the Republican primary vote. 57%, a resounding win among a field of six candidates. Addressing supporters last night, he called for unity in the Republican Party and said he would defy Pritzker's expectations of an easy general election win.
Here's a tip and some advice for J.B. Pritzker. Start packing, friend. Because on November 8th, you're fired. That's what's going to happen.
Bailey's victory is a significant change of fortune for another candidate in the Republican primary, Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin, who announced his candidacy in January with huge financial backing from billionaire hedge fund mogul Ken Griffin, Illinois' richest man, at least until he recently relocated to Florida. Ultimately, Griffin spent $50 million on Irvin, who ended up with just 15% of the vote. In his concession speech, Irvin, who is Black, did not mention he who shall not be named in his party, but he did say the GOP has some work to do, dispelling hate and bigotry.
We will understand that the Republican Party must be a party of policies, not personalities. We will discover that civil debate is the cornerstone of a strong republic, and even though we may disagree, we are still countrymen, and hurting and threatening one another is unpatriotic.
Overall, primary election night turned out better for Republicans who have sided with, or at least not challenged, former President Trump's false statements about the 2020 elections. It was also a good night for Republicans who've been vocal about opposing Governor Pritzker's COVID-19 mitigations. And across the aisle, progressives made some gains in state legislative races in the Democratic Party. We're going to talk about all that and more with a panel of great political reporters and observers. Rick Pearson is political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, always good to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
Kelsey Landis covers state government and politics at the Belleville News Democrat. Kelsey, welcome back. Great to have you with us, too.
Hi, Brian. Thanks.
And finally, Chris Mooney is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He also plays a mean bass guitar. Chris, I feel like we haven't talked in hours. Thanks for coming back today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Brian.
Listeners, we also want to hear from you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What surprised you about last night's outcomes? Are you excited or maybe worried about your party's prospects this fall? 800-222-9455 is the number to call. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. So, Rick, let's start at the top of the ticket. Governor Pritzker easily won his primary. Darren Bailey got 57%. What do you make of that outcome?
Yeah, that's in a six-way contest to rack up nearly 60% majority is pretty significant, given how, you know, competitive the field really was. But I do think it really shows this further rightward acceleration of Illinois Republicans, in part spurred by Donald Trump's presidency, and that is the direction of the Illinois Republicans. And the question comes down to that old adage that has existed in Illinois about, can someone that far to the right win a general election, especially in a state that's been trending blue for decades and beat Donald Trump by 17 percentage points in the last two presidentials.
It's an old story, right? There was this opportunity Republicans thought they had in 2010, right, when the Tea Party wave happened. There was an opportunity. I mean, this has been a long week. Chris and I were talking about this yesterday, Chris, the idea of the circular firing squad in the Republican Party. Could this time be different? And Chris Mooney, I'm going to send that to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Could this time be different? All of a sudden, Cook County, where probably more than a third of the people in the state live, and the collar counties, where another third of the state live, all of a sudden those people are going to say, "Yeah, I'm interested in having a crew cut wearing straw chewing." Guy from it looks like he stepped off the Hee-Haw set and come down here and be our governor. It doesn't seem all that likely, though. You know, stranger things have happened in this world, but I can't imagine what.
I'm going to leave that the Hee-Haw set. I think that that sent me over the edge. Rick, what do you think about? I mean, you've seen this show play out many times in the past. Could this year be different because of this sort of national groundswell that may or may not be coming for Republicans, a red wave?
Well, I think it's entirely possible that Bailey could do better than expected, but it is still an immense uphill climb that he has to make to have a very competitive race with J.B. Pritzker as things stand now. And of course, you know, a lot can change between now and November, but when you look at kind of the landscape of Illinois and you're looking at a incumbent governor who, for the most part, has not gotten into very serious trouble or created problems that create a wide questioning among the electorate about deserving reelection, then it's about Bailey trying to convince voters a reason to make change. And when that change is rooted in a far-right ideology that Democrats certainly don't agree with, and I would argue that many independents don't agree with in the kind of the environment of our times, it's going to be a very, very difficult road for Bailey to travel.
Kelsey Landis, what's your perspective on this? You're in the Metro East area, the other big population center in Illinois. Do you see voters down there? How are they thinking about the primary elections this year for governor?
Well, I mean, Darren Bailey's actions early on in the pandemic were some of the best campaigning that he could have done downstate. People knew him going into the polls yesterday in early voting. And even in traditionally Democratic strongholds, such as the Metro East, were seeing a rightward shift. So I wouldn't, if I were the Pritzker campaign, I wouldn't necessarily rely on the Metro East as another population center that you can reliably count on to support Democratic candidate. And as far as how folks see him, see Darren Bailey in the Metro East, I mean, he's a hero to a lot of folks, especially in the more rural portions of southwestern Illinois and certainly southern Illinois, where a lot of Pritzker's COVID pandemic policies were extremely unpopular, even among more moderate voters. So I could see him being fairly popular down here. Like I said, or like Rick said and Chris, it will be an uphill battle. It'll be extremely competitive. There's still a lot of union support in the Metro East and a lot of folks who are still looking to vote for a Democratic candidate. So it will be extremely competitive to try and get votes in this area.
Chris, if Darren Bailey chooses to try and moderate himself, right, to make that cross-party appeal, like I'm thinking of like Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, maybe he goes after, and well, we already know he's gone after, you know, quote-unquote critical race theory, which, I mean, to be factual, is something that's taught in law schools and in higher education settings. It's not being taught in school, but that's become a stand-in for really any teaching about race in lower schools in Illinois. Maybe he also goes after gay rights, trans rights. Do you see that potentially having some appeal this year that could help boost his chances?
Well, yeah, and that is the typical, you know, the typical way things occur, right? In the primary, you're running against opponents in your own party. And so the median voter in the primary is far to the left or the right, depending on the party, of the median voter in the general election. So you win the median voter in the primary, and then you move towards the center to appeal to the median voter in the general election. That's the typical playbook. But things are different these days. And I think the fact that Republicans have nominated Bailey, especially by such resounding numbers, I see no suggestion that he's going to moderate his perspective. We're going to get a real clash here, because J.B. Pritzker, on the one hand, is trying to burnish his bona fides with the progressive wing of the National Party for who knows what might happen in 2024. Maybe he's going to run for president. And then Darren Bailey down here on the right, probably not seriously thinking when he goes to bed that he's going to win, but he's trying to make a statement, right? He's trying to rally the faithful, the Trump faithful. And so it's going to be a very bifurcated and vicious campaign if, and this is a big if Bailey can get enough money to get substantially on the air. His sugar daddy just split the state for Florida. That was Richard Irvin.
The Republican Party.
Bailey sugar daddy still lives up in Lake County, right? Dick Eline. So he may come through with him.
Rick, I mean, talk about that, because that, I think, when you look at, so the line we've been talking about is that Governor Pritzker wants to run against Bailey because he thinks he might be easier to beat ideologically in Illinois. But if Ken Griffin's, you know, all in pledge to defeat Pritzker is neutralized now, that seems like another big factor in what motivated Pritzker to support the Democratic Governors Association, sort of burnishing Bailey's credentials in the Republican Party, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, with the fact that, as you said, you know, Ken Griffin vowing to go all in on a candidate, finds his candidate in Richard Irvin, who runs a horrible campaign and shows up with nothing. And Griffin leaves town to go to Florida, basically throwing up his hands and saying, you know, given this is what the Republican Party is, I'm not going to spend any more money here. And there is no doubt that he's not going to spend money on Darren Bailey. And so, yes, it comes down to the question of Dick Uihlein, which is a question among a lot of Republicans, is, yeah, Uihlein was in to Bailey for $9 million. He gave another $8 million to a Bailey-supporting political action committee. Okay, there's $17 million. That's one-tenth of what Pritzker spent to win election 4 years ago. $17 million will buy you some attention, but when you're up against a billionaire with unlimited resources, how much money is Dick Uihlein actually going to pour into this race to support Darren Bailey?
Right. And, yeah, you know, normally in a situation like this, donors are the ones that sort of regulate how big the campaign is going to be. So, and every candidate thinks they're going to win. They're all, you know, they and their family, they think they're a genius and so forth. But it's the cold-eyed donors that are looking at this. Am I going to invest my money in this person who's likely going to lose? And so that would bode poorly for Bailey, especially when you start seeing polling coming out, which I think we'll start seeing that pretty soon, and he won't be probably doing very well on that. So, but the big difference is, and this is because we have these billionaires playing politics, you know, these literally less than that, billionaires playing politics here, is that Dick Eline has shown himself more than happy to spend millions and millions of dollars on failed campaigns in the past and giving money to operatives who continue to fail and fail in terms of winning. And primarily, I suppose it's because he's strongly ideological. He really appreciates this particular perspective, the right-wing perspective, and he wants to see it publicized. So he's willing to, Bailey may still get some millions from Eline. The question is, how much is Eline willing to invest of his own money in a failing campaign?
And Chris goes to a good point here too, is about the traditional conservative, more moderate Republican split in Illinois, where conservatives were actually kind of content to play martyrs for the purity of their beliefs and put that as a priority over electability.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we may see signs of that in this Bailey campaign.
Although they were always, as we said yesterday, kind of off at 20% of the electorate, not actually the dog catching the bus, so to speak. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about downstream consequences of some of the primary elections outcomes last night, as well as some of the congressional outcomes. Rodney Davis's career in Congress will be coming to an end, at least based on his loss in the Republican primary to Mary Miller. More to come on the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. We're recapping last night's primary election results. Governor Pritzker is going to be facing Republican Farmer and State Senator Darren Bailey for the governor's race. We're also seeing that Bailey made his name in part by opposing Governor Pritzker's COVID mandates, as did a man named Tom DeVore, who filed lawsuits all over the state opposing the governor's restrictions. He won the Republican primary for attorney general, so he's going to be facing incumbent Democratic Attorney General Kwame Raoul, who ran unopposed. Alexi Janulis is going to be facing Dan Brady for Secretary of State, succeeding Jesse White. We can talk about those races a little bit later. We're talking with Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, Kelsey Landis of the Belleville News Democrat, and Chris Mooney of the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's a professor of political science there. But first, Kelsey, I want to turn to one of the big congressional races. This got national attention, and that is Rodney Davis versus Mary Miller, both incumbents, drawn together, if you will. I guess Mary Miller made the choice to run, even though she doesn't live precisely in the district. She's very close by. I know you've been covering this race. Tell us what happened there.
Right. So this was an instance where you had a longtime congressman, Rodney Davis, who's been in Congress since 2013, gerrymandered by state Democrats into a district that was suddenly extremely red. He in the previous two congressional elections in his old district, soon to be old district, had to sort of move towards the center politically in order to win against a pretty competitive Democratic candidate, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. And he was successful, narrowly successful. He defeated her twice, but he did it by creating a sort of moderate persona, a bipartisan persona in Congress. He couldn't survive it when Democrats drew him into this new 15th congressional district, where suddenly he was forced to become a much harder right candidate that really didn't match up with his background in Congress. And even though Mary Miller was sort of carved very delicately out of this district, she was really kind of the perfect candidate for the new 15th congressional district, possibly one of the most conservative Republican, hard right Republican leaning districts in the country. And with her, even though she's only had served a little less than one term in Congress, she was a better fit for these folks. And she won with 57% of the vote, roughly, with most of the votes being counted by now. She even defeated Davis in 7 of the counties that are part or of his existing congressional district. So it was, yeah, she really blew him out of the water.
Yeah. And just to give people an idea, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the former president who gave an endorsement to Miller previously and then showed up at a rally for her outside Quincy this past weekend. And that's also when he endorsed Darren Bailey. Rick, were you surprised by the sort of resoundingness of Miller's victory here? Or is this just the sort of math of Davis going from a purple district into one that was like, I don't know, burgundy?
Well, I was, but when you look at kind of that's the same percentage that Bailey won the state, and you know, here again about, you know, where are Illinois Republicans these days, and they are that much further right, and it's also a representative of a repudiation of Republican establishment that, you know, you had Rodney had 31 of the 35 county Republican chairmen in that district. He had the backing of his two neighboring congressmen and Darren LaHood of Peoria and Mike Bost of Murfreesboro. You look at those kind of factors and it's almost like it's a falling into kind of that Trump ideology of Illinois Republicans as playing the role of disruptors and to disrupt the status quo and disrupt the establishment with their choices for office.
That's such a great point about the party leaders going with Davis and the party voters going in another way. I just have this, you know, there's that old line about I have to see where my people are going so I can lead them, Chris Mooney. What I mean, is this the Republican voters are speaking in a way that party leaders are having to sort of run to keep up with the parade? Do you see downstream consequences for the party in Illinois coming out of these outcomes?
Well, the downstream consequences that the party will probably continue to shrink in terms of the electorate, in terms of their majorities or their representation in the legislature, and their ability to win at statewide level is going to be weaker and weaker because, you know, what hard right conservative person has won a statewide office in Illinois in living memory, right?
Peter Fitzgerald.
Peter Fitzgerald is the only one, right? And he was running against Carol Moseley Braun at a time where Carol Moseley Braun was, you know, had weakened herself. And Fitzgerald was smart enough not to run the second time because he knew it. And that's when we get Tammy Duckworth. So, yes, ideological purity. Even I have a hard time even talking about ideological purity because this is fealty to one person. Okay, this is Donald Trump, and that's what we're talking about. All these, you know, talk about establishment. I mean, talk about, you know, Donald Trump is now the establishment for this party. And number one, that shrinks it because there's a lot of people, particularly in the suburbs, particularly among women, who have a part-time with Donald Trump. So that's going to push them out of the party. Plus, you know, this, you know, in case people haven't been noticing over the course of summer during this campaign, there have been these hearings going on in D.C. that doesn't make things look very good for Trump going down the road. So if his base starts shrinking generally nationwide, it's never going to go away. Right. There's, you know, when I was a kid in Wisconsin in the 60s, there was still people that really liked Joe McCarthy. Right. There was old people that you didn't say anything bad about Joe McCarthy because they still like him. So there will always be people that like Donald Trump, but it's going to get fewer and fewer, especially as some, you know, we start seeing legal implications and so forth. So, yeah, I think this is bad for the Republican Party. It's bad for Illinois politics because we need to have two viable parties so they can, you know, play off each other and you know, help represent the state.
I want to read a comment we got on Twitter from Eric, who says the GOP in Illinois is definitely voting based upon their religious beliefs with an eye to making Illinois into a theocracy. 800-222-9455 if you want to sound off on last night's elections. Are you feeling good about your party's prospects? Maybe you're feeling worried about your party's prospects. 800-222-9455. We're talking with Chris Mooney, professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago, Rick Pearson, political reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and Kelsey Landis, who covers state government and politics for the Belleville News Democrat. Kelsey, we touched on this earlier with Darren Bailey and COVID restrictions. I want to turn now to Attorney General candidate Tom DeVore. And I mean, he obviously made a big name for himself fighting Governor Pritzker on COVID. Do you get the sense, talking to everyday people, that coronavirus is still a big issue? We put out a request for text messages on yesterday's show, and somebody did say, like, why is no one talking about COVID anymore? But, you know, as somebody who myself is still concerned with COVID-19, I'm still wearing a mask in the office most of the time. People are not really talking about this. Is this something that you're finding that voters are concerned with?
I think what happened with Tom DeVore was more that's where it started, and then the issue morphed into other ideological territories. Tom DeVore also, it started with restrictions, and then it turned into masks in school. And when you talk about masks in schools, you're also talking about books in schools. You're talking about, teaching about racism in schools. And people start to make those connections. And I think that's what made him a hugely popular, I'm not sure the margin with which he won, but it was fairly comfortable. And I think that it's not just COVID. People aren't as concerned about that, at least in the voters who are voting in this primary, really not worried about it. They don't want it to come back. They don't want restrictions to come back. But I think that politically, Tom DeVore and candidates like him were able to connect, and Darren Bailey too, Mary Miller, they were able to connect those restrictions to other cultural issues. And bank off of that success politically in this election.
I think with DeVore's victory too, if you could find Steve Kim's campaign, it would probably be on a milk carton saying, "Have you seen this man?" Because that was perhaps the most non-existent statewide campaign that I've seen in a long time. And it's particularly odd because he was part of the Ken Griffin funded Richard Irvin slate of statewide candidates. But and to the point too that even in Kim's previous runs for public office, he's never been a really dynamic campaigner, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that whole slate did not do well. John Millhiser, who some of our Central Illinois listeners will remember, was the Sangamon County State's Attorney. Full disclosure, I was once on a jury where he was the prosecutor on the case. He was also a U.S. Attorney under the Trump administration for the Central District of Illinois, and he lost to Dan Brady on the Republican primary for Secretary of State. I'll be honest with you, I had to look up last night to remind myself who even was the candidate for controller on the Republican side against Susana Mendoza. Neither of them had opposition. And then Tom Demmer, Republican state representative in leadership, viewed as an up-and-comer, I think, at least among the House Republicans. He's going to be facing Treasurer Mike Frerichs. And then Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulias is a name from the past, Rick, who is coming back to, and again, he'll be running against State Representative Dan Brady to succeed Jesse White after a term of office that literally exceeds the lifetime, probably, of some significant number of people in Illinois. What do you make of that race?
Well, you know, that's the Democratic race was very interesting because, yes, it's, you know, after a decade off the scene, after having a loss to Mark Kirk in the U.S. Senate race, Giannoulias makes his comeback, is able to raise a lot of dough, get a lot of union support. But you had here the Democratic establishment, including aspects of the Democratic establishment that don't always play well together, all supported Anna Valencia for the Secretary of State over him. And it's kind of a very strange dynamic because, you know, what does that say about the rest of the Democratic ticket moving forward with Alexei being part of that ticket? And if you remember, 10 years ago, that race against Mark Kirk, there was a lot of baggage that Giannoulis was had to deal with over his family's failed Chicago bank and loans that were given to allegedly mob-connected people in Florida. And what was Giannoulis' role, which evolved from being a senior loan officer at the bank to somebody who was just passing paperwork and not really involved. And you got to believe that's all going to come up again. And whether it was Millhiser as a prosecutor, which I think may have been one of the keys why he ran for that instead of attorney general, or it was certainly Dan Brady, who's a longtime experienced politician, not part of the Trump ideology kind of cult, you know, this stuff is going to come up, and that's going to be a very, very contentious race. But I think for Brady's part, it's going to have to be, here again, raising some money, because Giannoulis has proven he's very adept at that.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time together. Kelsey Landis, I'm wondering, what are you going to be watching for as the election turns from the primaries to the general election? We now have, it's later this year than we're used to, the primary coming in late June rather than in the winter, as it usually did. That was delayed because of the census results were delayed. Lawmakers wanted to wait to draw the maps until they had the latest numbers. But what are you going to be watching for in the months ahead, Kelsey?
I'm really going to be looking at the 13th congressional district, which was drawn to be a fairly safe district. This is the district that kind of snakes across central Illinois into the metro east, including, you know, Decatur, Springfield, portions of Decatur, Springfield, it's the new Belleville district. So we're going to be watching that to see just how well the Democrat candidate Nikki Budzinski does against the Republican nominee Regan Deering. Democrats seem to think that that's a pretty safe draw for them. But like I said earlier, I wouldn't make any assumptions in that race. And we'll be keeping an eye on it. And of course, with Mary Miller being the, you know, presumed, she's, you know, highly favored to win in the 15th congressional district, the Democratic candidate probably isn't going to be super competitive. We're going to be watching how Mary Miller does, how she serves constituents, because unlike Rodney Davis, she actively ignores and doesn't speak to the media. And so we're going to be looking at transparency in her second term in Congress, should she win this fall. And, you know, as well as functionally, is she, you know, the same vote as Rodney Davis, or is this sort of ideological difference going to continue with the concerns about speaking favorably about Adolf Hitler and the white life comment, which at the Trump rally, which this spokesperson said was a mistake. We're going to be keeping an eye on those things to see if, you know, she is going to sort of double down on those on that rhetoric, or if the tides turn for Donald Trump's reputation in the country, if she might, you know, change a little bit. I don't know. Those are things that we're going to be keeping an eye on.
All right. And we will also be keeping an eye on all of this, and we will continue talking about it on the 21st show. Kelsey Landis of the Belleville News Democrat, Chris Mooney of the University of Illinois Chicago, and Rick Pearson with the Chicago Tribune. Thank you all so much for being with us to recap the primary election here on the 21st show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thanks.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st show. Do stay with us.